It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Robert Siegel. A major for-profit education company admits its employees may have misled students about their job prospects after graduation. Career Education Corporation says it has found problems with its job placement numbers and announced a major management shakeup. As NPR's Larry Abramson reports, some for-profit education companies are having a hard time surviving in a tighter regulatory environment.
Career Education Corporation has over 100,000 students worldwide, many in its well-known Cordon Bleu culinary schools. The company has been seen as vulnerable as the Department of Education cracks down on for-profit schools, demanding higher graduation rates. Last week, the company's stock price suddenly plunged after management announced a major shakeup. The CEO was out. Why? Chief Financial Officer Mike Graham says a company investigation had uncovered problems with the most important statistics for a career school, job placement rates.
We're obviously very disappointed by these findings, but we took swift and effective action in identifying the conduct and rooting out the problem.
The company probed the numbers at 49 of its schools. Turns out only 13 had actually achieved a key metric. They'd placed 65% of their students in jobs related to their field of study. The rest may have used misleading numbers to lure students. Career Education Corporation must place 65% of its graduates in relevant jobs if it wants to hold on to accreditation and access to federal aid money. Tony Bita is with the Accrediting Council for Independent Colleges and Schools. He says his organization now has to audit the school's numbers to see how far back these problems go.
So our council gets to review what the school is doing on the ground to improve the placement rates that have fallen below our compliance thresholds.
This news comes as the Attorney General of New York has subpoenaed documents from Career Education. The AG wants to see whether the company may have violated state laws on consumer protection by possibly publishing misleading statistics. Job placement rates are the Achilles heel of the for-profit industry. Career college students pay high prices for promises of, well, a career. They don't want a framed diploma. Gerald Price watches the industry for Height Analytics.
Particularly in this economic environment, strong job placement rate in a desired career is a vital recruiting tactic for the for-profit sector.
While Career Education struggles with subpoenas and a review by its accreditor, it also faces the same drops in enrollment that have dragged down the stock prices of many for-profit educators. On average, the company says the number of new enrollments dropped 22% over last year. That's similar to news from the Washington Post Company, which just reported more than $6 million in losses in the third quarter, thanks in part to tanking enrollments at its Kaplan Education division. The odd thing is that some of these declines are almost intentional. Schools are under pressure from regulators to improve outcomes, so many have been tightening standards. The hope is this will improve the prospects for long-term growth. Gerald Price says the companies whose enrollment numbers bottom out first may have an advantage, like Apollo Group, which owns industry leader University of Phoenix.
Some of their peers, like Apollo, started their transformation earlier, and therefore they're further toward stabilizing their businesses.
The career education announcements will test the promises of accrediting bodies. In the past, they have been accused of using too gentle a touch and basically helping errant schools get back on track. And it will test new federal regulations, which require that for-profit schools post reliable information or get out of the career education business. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.
Finally, you remember when Attorney General Eric Holder famously said that we are a nation of cowards when it comes to race? Well, based on two recent stories that have been in the news, you might think he should have left it at cowards. The first story I'm talking about might be one that escaped your attention unless you live in the Washington, D.C. area. That's where a jury last week convicted a young woman named Brittany Norwood of viciously stabbing her co-worker Jana Murray to death, evidently because Murray had caught Norwood stealing a pair of yoga pants. That's awful enough, especially after Norwood terrified her neighbors and tried to distract the police by blaming the crime she committed on two stranger rapists who did not exist. But what makes the whole thing even more horrible is the fact that two Apple Store managers right next door, one male, one female, heard a violent commotion, heard grunting, screaming, and a woman begging for help, and did absolutely nothing about it, except, apparently, tell a store security guard to check it out. There was no call to 911. There was no banging on the wall, no nothing, except their testimony to confirm what we already knew, that a young woman's life was taken for no good reason at all. And then there's the second story that might have escaped your attention unless you follow sports, and that's about the legendary Penn State assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky. Sandusky, now retired, has been arrested and charged with molesting as many as 8 young boys over a 15-year period, some of whom were participating in programs connected with the children's charity with which he was involved. And yes, he deserves his day in court for these terrible crimes, as do the university officials who have also been charged because, according to the indictment, they were allegedly told of this behavior by direct eyewitnesses to it, but again, chose to do nothing. Nothing, that is, except order Sandusky not to bring children to Penn State's locker rooms. Can I just tell you, it's easy to sit here and condemn these people, rage against them, and I will confess I've spent more than a few minutes composing in my head the insults I'd like to deliver to them all. If you've ever been victimized, is there anything worse than knowing that someone knew, that someone could have helped you and didn't? Those who did or are alleged to have committed crimes themselves will be brought to account and indeed already have been. Brittany Norwood is going to prison. All the Penn State officials who've been implicated profess their innocence, and the process will go forward. But what about those who stood by, who could have said something, even just made a phone call, but did not? No doubt these cases will end up in somebody's case study. There are already all kinds of theories, such as people don't step in if they can't see the actual victim or if they don't identify with him or her. But how does that explain the graduate student assistant who allegedly actually saw a little boy being raped and, according to the indictment, told Penn State's head football coach Joe Paterno, who told athletic director Tim Curley, but no one told the police? Weren't we all kids once? In the meantime, I might humbly suggest that the people we all need to hold to account are ourselves. Because how many times have we all done it? Walked away when we could have stopped, kept driving when we could have turned the car around? How many times have we acted like that kid being beaten, that the woman being threatened, the coworker being harassed, had nothing to do with us when we are the us, or could be? And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
The number of Americans who use food stamps is now close to 46 million. That's 15% of the population. The program is formerly known as SNAP these days, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And the number of people who depend on it to buy groceries has grown substantially, even since the recession was officially declared over back in June of 2009. Why is food stamp use rising so fast? Well, we're going to ask John Davis, who is director of the program in Mississippi. That's the state with the largest slice of its population using SNAP, 21%. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And we'll ask you about Mississippi. Why is it? Is it more people in need or more needy people knowing about what they can get?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you know, the economic downturn, of course, is a contributing factor, and we know that from a historical standpoint, anytime there's a decrease in the job availability, there's going to be an increase in our program.
But it sounds like there are more people receiving food assistance in Mississippi than there are unemployed people in Mississippi. Fair enough?
Well, that may be true, but that's kind of a misnomer in the fact that we know that underemployment is just as important of a contributing factor as the fact that they're unemployed.
How much money does a family of four, say, on SNAP or food stamps get?
We're looking at a family of four, probably around $668
a month. $668
a month? Correct.
Or that would be, you know, roughly $150 a week.
Correct.
You figure that can pretty well feed a family of four.
Well, I think that it can certainly go a long way in helping the family, but this program is a supplemental program. It was never intended to fully fund the family's need for food. I mean, it's just a supplemental program.
I was looking at numbers from 2009, which broke down the national food stamp receiving
population by ethnicity. Mm-hmm. Just under 8% of white non-Hispanic households received food stamps then. For African-American households, it was triple that, just under 24%. And Hispanic households also had a very high rate, over 17%. Does that square generally with your sense of who's getting food assistance in Mississippi?
We don't keep those statistics here in the state, so I can't really speak to that.
There was a lot of attention paid to the Gulf Coast during the summer of the BP oil spill
right.
in the Gulf and damage that it did to, say, the fishing right. industry and to tourism. Do you feel that? Do you see that come up in
yes,
these numbers?
Yes, we did. We still report on that. As a matter of fact, we track those numbers, and we find that that there was an increase based on the oil spill. One thing, of course, we did outreach on the coast in the coastal counties to ensure that individuals knew about the program. But another thing, we had industries that were either closed or that went into hibernation. So, therefore, it was just a ripple effect. If the fishermen weren't fishing, then there were other industries affected as well.
When we heard these numbers were coming out, and someone said, "Let's talk to the state with the with the highest share of its population receiving food stamps."
Right.
Somehow, naturally, we all assumed, "Well, that's going to be somewhere in the South, and it's going to
yeah.
be probably on the Gulf Coast, and turn out to be Mississippi."
Right.
Why is it we're not surprised that Mississippi should have such a high rate?
Well, I mean, just traditionally or historically, I believe we know that the poverty rate in Mississippi is high. That's just a fact. And we know that we're not heavily industrialized as some of the other areas. But and we have a lot of rural population. Most of our counties are rural counties. We have no huge metropolitan areas. So those individuals, when they're without jobs, they're directly affected. So Mississippi seems to come up on top there.
And in this case, it means that the government effectively is feeding one Mississippian in five right now.
Oh, well, that's what the statistics say.
Well, Mr. Davis, thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
That's John Davis, who is the director of the SNAP program. SNAP is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It means people who receive food stamps. He's in charge in Mississippi.